Last week, we participated in what has become an annual event of sharing a Thanksgiving meal with interfaith partners. And it's one of my favorite events of the year in this congregation, and so I was very disappointed not to be able to be here. I was participating in a week-long social justice training and then was actually at National Avenue Christian Church in Springfield, Missouri, where I got to see Jen Simmons, our former pastor, and her family, and it was good to worship with them. But one thing I know happened here, because some of you have told me and I remember from previous years, is that you got to talk with folks that you don't see very often, and you got to interact with people who have traditions that are other than yours, and you might have even learned something that surprised you because you heard the story from a different perspective. Some of the folks with whom you spoke might have been from the Jewish faith. They might have been Muslims. And you might have heard stories about those people and their faith, but not often have had a chance to hear from those people about their faith. If you're like me, sometimes when you have those one-on-one conversations, you learn things that undo the things that you had learned before. Every once in a while, a stereotype is destroyed. Every once in a while, new information is shared. And you understand, perhaps like the way the wolf told the wolf story in the story that Susan shared this morning, that things aren't always the way we thought they seemed. There's an African proverb that says something like, "Until the lion tells his tale, the hunter will always be glorified in the story of the hunt." I was thinking about that as I was reading this bit from 2 Samuel, because David sure tells a great story about who David is. You could hear my incredulousness, perhaps, as I was reading it today. David was really talking up a great game, and of course it's done in the form of an oracle. It's almost as if the Spirit is filling David to say all these great things about David. It seemed a lot less about God and a lot more about David, but there were his last words, and after all, you wouldn't expect him to run himself down for his last go at public speaking. But it got me to wondering, what is it about each of us that tries so hard to tell our story as if we are the one and only hero? Part of it is, of course, perspective. But some of it is, I think, pride. And I wonder what it would mean for us to take pride and perspective and ask about their purpose. Why do we tell the stories the way that we do? Is it to protect ourselves? Is it because if we can truly believe the story the way that we tell it, we'll feel better about who we are and what we do? Is it to justify ourselves? And I wonder sometimes what we miss if we're the only ones telling the story, and if ours are the only voices we're willing to hear. Now, we live in a day and age where it's difficult to know what exactly the story is, isn't it? Believe the wolf. The wolf says some overzealous reporters got a hold of the story and told it in the way that seemed the most marketable. One wonders sometimes, how are we hearing stories? Who's sharing the stories with us? I want to suggest that if the hunter, the victor, always tells the tale, we'll never, ever hear the side of the vanquished. 1 and 2 Samuel and the Chronicles that we find in the First Testament are in many ways advertisements for the Davidic monarchy. You don't expect to hear a lot of bad stuff about David and his household in those places. And yet, especially in 2 Samuel, especially in the Samuel tale, we find out a little bit of stuff about David that David might not want us to know. We learn that David isn't exactly the greatest husband. David isn't exactly the greatest general. David isn't exactly the greatest man. David isn't exactly the greatest father. And that gets him in trouble, and that hurts other people. In fact, not only is David not exactly the best of all of those things, in many of the stories that we encounter, he is the worst of all of those things. He's violent, misogynist, a cad, a murderer, one who assaults women. And yet, David, in his last oracular burst of verbiage, shares with us how wonderful he is and how connected with God he is. Mixed bag, that David, huh? Now, that's enough about David. Let's talk about you, shall we? And as we're talking about you, we're talking about me, we're talking about us. Seems to me that we always want to tell our stories in a way that seems as if we're the hero. The hunter tells a story in which the hunter is valiant and the lion is evil. The pig, or the ham as it were, tells the story of how the wolf is nasty and violent, and how the pig is happy-go-lucky, honest, brave and true. What happens when we tell our stories this way is that other stories are silenced. This is Reign of Christ Sunday. This is the final Sunday of the liturgical year, and it might not feel that way to you, but the liturgical year comes to its completion now, and we begin a new liturgical year next week with the beginning of Advent. And at Reign of Christ Sunday, today we acknowledge Christ the King. We acknowledge that Christ is sovereign over all of the universe. And yet, it seems to me that we often want to act as if that isn't so. Well, how do we do that? I think we do that by overlaying our story on top of Christ's story, and thinking that if we're aligned with Christ's lordship and Christ's sovereignty, then perhaps that means that we are kings and queens. We are the sovereigns. We are the lords. It becomes a dynastic tale of our accomplishments, of our deeds. And we lose what it means to be followers, what it means to be disciples, what it means to be servants. If we proclaim Christ the King, if we say that Jesus is for us a sovereign, Jesus is for us a model, Jesus is the one whom we follow, then our lives must be reflective lives. We must ask about the stories that we tell, and we must listen for the stories of others. That's something Jesus was willing to do. I'm recalling two stories, one akin to the other, in the Gospels of Matthew and Mark, the story of the Canaanite woman and the Syrophoenician woman. Women who come to Jesus asking for healing help for a family member, and women whom Jesus insults. And yet, the Gospels include these stories of Jesus asking, or rather acting, as sort of an insulting cad, and the women responding back to him, and Jesus changing, learning, growing, and offering healing. Somehow, the Canaanite woman and the Syrophoenician women's stories got in those Gospels. Kind of a scandal, really. I mean, the Gospels are all about Jesus. What a wonderful guy he is. And yes, here are these stories where he doesn't quite look as friendly and loving as you might see in a Sunday school portrait. Why would the Gospels include a story like that? Maybe to remind us that our sovereign, Christ the King, listens to the stories of others and is willing to be compassionate, is willing not to have his own story overwrite theirs. Maybe because communities grow when that can happen. Last week, I was at a social justice organizer training, part of the required training for my ordination. So every year, you have to have a certain number of hours of continuing education, and I chose to participate in this, and boy, was I sorry by Tuesday that I had chosen to participate in it, because one of the things that was required is that we have honest, searching, fearless, one-on-one conversations with other participants for hours and hours each day, telling the truth about who we are and our failures in life and our worries and our fears. I would have rather done anything than that. But by about Thursday, I realized the power of participating in those kinds of conversations. When you really tell your story honestly, not as if you are the hero, you are so valiant, you are so wonderful, but when you really say, I was afraid when this happened. I made a mistake when I did this. This hurt me deeply. I hope that can happen. And you really hear the story of another. In the midst of that honesty, in the midst of that humility, healing change can happen. I believe that that's part of step number 4 of the 12-step program for addictions. Take an honest and searching self-inventory to really understand who you are and what you've done, and it's a moral inventory. Where have I gone wrong? What could I have done better? Whom have I harmed? And in step 4 of that program, one even writes out this moral inventory so one can see an accounting of it. What does your story look like? Where are the places where you could have done better? Where are the places where you are not the hero, even of your own story? And what does it mean to acknowledge those places? It doesn't mean that you grind yourself down into the ground. It doesn't mean that you grovel for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean that you're not a person anymore. What it does mean is you are a person. If Christ is our sovereign, as we celebrate today, if God is our creator, as we remind ourselves often, if we are not kings and queens, but followers and disciples and servants, what would it mean for us to tell our own story honestly and to listen to the stories of others? Others who have suffered harm, others whose stories have not been amplified, others who have something serious to say to us. And there are many stories like that. Often in a room full of people, those who have least power are not heard. Often in the gathering of a nation, those who have been pushed out of power seem to have no voice. And yet in any room, everyone has something to say. Everyone has feelings and words to share. And in every nation, everyone's voice should be valuable. When the hunter tells the tale, the lion's story is never told. What would the lion's story look like? Or the pigs, or the wolves, or the Christians, or the Muslims, or the Jews? What does it mean for us, the people who remember and celebrate this story, the story of a table, the story of a Jesus who offers bread and a cup to his friends and disciples as he offers himself, his very body and blood, to a vision of God's justice, a vision of God's love. Telling stories is dangerous business. Telling stories is powerful business. Hearing stories can be dangerous and powerful as well. But without evaluating our stories, without understanding and asking about who we are and the narratives that we speak and the narratives that we hear, the healing and the growth, the justice and the love that God demands of us cannot happen. I want to encourage you as we enter into the season of Advent next week to be thinking about the stories that you hear and ask yourselves, whose voice am I not hearing in this story? And think about the stories that you tell. Think about whose voice is not being represented in this story. And ask this: does God honor all of the voices in each of those stories? Does hearing all of the voices help us to understand truth just a little better? And what would it mean? What would it mean if we spoke less loudly so that others might be heard? What would it mean if our mouths were more often silent so that our ears could more often listen? What would it mean to see not ourselves as sovereigns, not ourselves as kings and queens, not ourselves as the ordained, but to understand God as our sovereign and ourselves as servants, as followers, as disciples? David, obviously, had a rich and interesting life. A life that engaged with and was engaged by God and God's people. But when he tells the story here in 2 Samuel 23, it seems to me that he oversells it just a little bit. And that is a cautionary tale for us. What stories do we tell about ourselves? How do we hear the stories of others? How might we do both of those things with more and more humility? Just quickly, I mention almost every time this time of year that my family has a connection with that pilgrim story that gets told at Thanksgiving. I have three ancestors who are on the Mayflower. That seems like a lot for a boat that didn't have very many people on it. And so the story of the pilgrims with their big hats and their buckled shoes, which they may or may not have had, and their fancy meal and their interesting relationships and all of their know-how, turns out is only one version of a story, and perhaps a story poorly told. As we remember that story every year, I'm reminded that in Plymouth, the day after Thanksgiving, Native Americans gather and tell a different story. A story of deception. A story of harm. A story of genocide. A story of exclusion and fear. When the hunter tells the story, the lion's side is never heard. All of those stories make us who we are. Be God's people, to follow a suffering servant is to become humble, suffering servants, to hear the stories of others and to tell ours honestly, even though sometimes it hurts. But as we walk forward and as we share those painful moments, remember this: those painful moments, those failures, those places where perhaps you wouldn't want to say out loud your story as it exists, those aren't the end of you. Those have made you who you are today, the person you are today, who God loves. About Tuesday of last week, I said earlier, I just was really, really disappointed that I was spending my week telling stories and hearing those of others. I was starting to feel really, really down. And I thought, what kind of awful, sadistic person would make somebody do this work? And then on Wednesday, this is what they told us. Now that's all out there, and you've even shared it with some people. You're still here, aren't you? You're still okay, aren't you? Are those stories more powerful than you? No. Have those stories destroyed you? No. Do those stories own you? No. They are what they are. They help to make you who you are. And now you can move forward and be the person you want to be. And now you can move forward honest about who you are and understanding all of those around you who also have honest stories to live and to tell. As we recount the stories of our faith and the stories of our lives, let us never forget the God who loves us, who calls us to be transformed, to grow, to love one another, just as we are loved. Amen.